So this weekend we decided to go to the final women's home game and try our hardest to avoid social media and other areas in order to make sure we didn't get a spoiler on the score. And around the 60 so on, or maybe more like halftime for us, my daughter decided to text a family friend to ask if they were still coming to the game, because they were going to be actually going and watching the men's game live. And in the process, the family friend sent a lovely, "The boys are up one" to us. And my wife's like, "No!
It might not have been such a big deal, except for the fact that it had been 450 minutes since they've scored a goal on the road, have yet to win a game on the road this year. So that's like spoiler of all spoiler
Yeah,
alerts.
exactly. And so my wife saw the spoiler on the phone. I did not. She was gracious enough not to share with me, but I knew she knew something. And so then the person gets there at the game. They finished watching the men's game. They show up at the women's game, and they proceed to say, "I don't understand why it was such a big deal." And so now in my head, I'm going, well, maybe they just said, like, "It's a close one," or "It's a nail biter," or something like that. And then when I found out they said the boys are up one, I was like, how is that not a big deal?
Is this the part where we tell everyone it was my wife?
I was trying my hardest, but yes. Thank you for that.
Soccer chat with two T's, because we're going to chat about soccer, but we're also in Chattanooga. So it's like a play on words. And, Chattanooga is a soccer city.
Welcome to episode 18 of the Soccer Chat. I am Adam Bruce, joined as always by Alex Fordney. We are brought to you by Golden Goal Press and Roughneck Scarves. Alex, big game this weekend. Finally, the boys finally got on the board on the road. That was, needless to say, nice to finally see.
It was a huge relief when that goal went in the 62nd minute to finally see them break through. They had looked good the whole game, very well organized on defense. They were, I remember the first game they played in Richmond, they started each half with a frenzy, pushing to try to get a breakthrough. Didn't get it. They ended up giving up the goal later to Richmond and ended up losing that game. In this game, it really was more like the first 15 minutes or so, they kind of absorbed what Richmond had and then transitioned into attacking. Looked a lot better at the end of the second half, at the end of the first half, and looked really good in the second half, pushing forward, and were able to get that second goal in stoppage time as well. That made it seem like, okay, this isn't a fluke.
So I would say, I think we've said this already, but let's go ahead and just say it again. The Greenville game, that was a game that Greenville dominated and we escaped with a win, right? I think that's a fair statement. This was a game I felt like it was relatively close at times, but for the most part, we really did control the game. There was a few scary moments. There was a couple of good saves by Alex Mangles. There was a few times where Tony Walls really stepped up and stopped some pretty good buildup on their part. There was one time where our Loney definitely looked like he wasn't sure what in the world he was doing and passed the ball directly to them and gave them a great opportunity. So it's not that they didn't have the chances. I mean, Navarro, legitimately, I was like, whoa, that was bad. That looked like our first game versus North Texas all over again. But we stepped up. Our defense did their part. And honestly, I felt like that was a deserved win. That wasn't a we got out of there and escaped with a win. That was a we deserved to win this game. We were the dominant team throughout.
For sure, watching twice, being at the watch party with some of the alphas at one of their houses, and then watching again this morning on TV, the whole 30 minutes after that first goal is score after the first goal is scored, I really never felt like, oh my gosh, we're hanging on by our fingernails. Like, they did a really good job of closing it down and keeping everything secure. Now, there were chances. I mean, Richmond's a good team. They were able to move and try to get a few chances, but it was never anything where it was like just crazy. We thought we were going to give up that lead. They did a great job closing that out.
So on the rewatch, how many different variations of our players' names did you count that the announcer got wrong?
Quite a few.
So that was legitimately, so we watched it when we got home, put the kids to bed, 10:30, we start the game. And it was the comic relief for April and I. Like, at one point he referred to Sito as CT. He kept referring to Ami as Pineda, which almost sounded like pinata.
Yeah, he was going for pinata, I think.
It was a lot of fun to laugh at that and to just realize he butchered both of Eamon Zayed's names. He called him Eamon Zayed, and he just added extra letters in there. It was entertaining. And then I remembered it's the same guy that we had the last Richmond game who did the same thing with like simple names. Like he called Stephen Beatty Bete, and he called my favorite. He was when he went to I'm blanking on my favorite.
Juan.
No, okay, what did he do with Juan?
There it may not have been Richmond, but there was someone that kept referring to him as Mir.
Like a meerkat?
Instead of Mare or even Mare, yeah. Which might be somewhat understandable.
So it was the one I'm thinking of is it was Zaguro's first name.
Oh yeah.
Did you hear it? What did he refer to him?
Did he call him Zangel or Vangel?
He called him Van Hell.
Van Hell.
like he'd been watching Van Helsing or something like that right. Recently.
Feel like as most of these broadcast teams are being set up by League One, that League One might be able to, I don't know, print up a phonetic pronunciation sheet.
That would definitely be the smart move. And I will say this much. We have a lot of international players. And I'm not looking at Jamie Dell here when I'm saying that. Honestly, we went up to, and I think I may have mentioned this in a different podcast, but I'm going to bring it up anyways. We went up to Eamon Zayed during one of the meet and greets with our son, and my son is a fan of his. And so we asked, like, how do we correctly pronounce your name? And he's like, it's Zayed, like Zayed with a Z. And my daughter goes, he means Z, to my five-year-old, because my five-year-old looked confused. And he goes, no, I mean Zed. Because he's from Ireland, and that's how they said the letter Z, Zed. But we had to ask him that, yes, his name is Zayed. And then he went on to tell us, though, that he's been playing for Hankinson for over 2 years, and he still refers to him as Eamon instead of Eamon. So he still says, Eamon, Eamon.
That feels like a coaching thing. Like he's going to keep calling him by the wrong name as some kind of motivational tool. Yeah, and it's true. We've got a lot more, you know, Sito Seyon. Is it Seyon? Is it Seyone? You know, there's lots of different kind of things. But, it doesn't seem like it's that hard to get someone from the league, you know, to get in touch with our team, to go to the players and say, how do we pronounce your name? Okay, I'll write that phonetically. Hey, person whose job it is to call all of these games, here's the pronunciation sheet. Don't mess it up.
Yeah. So the other thing that guy did bring up multiple times is we play them 4 times this year. We are now 1-1 versus them. We've lost one at Richmond. We've won one at Richmond. We have 2 more games, both at home versus them. And the next one's in 2 weeks. Now, granted, we're going to talk here in a little bit about the upcoming Greenville game, which has a similar turnaround time as our last Greenville game. But what do you think about these quick turnaround times where you're playing the same team just a couple weeks later? Is there an impact to that, or is it just it is what it is with 10 teams in the league?
I think it is what it is with 10 teams in the league. The whole schedule feels like a rush job. There's you know, wonky things all over. Richmond has already concluded all of the games they're going to play against Lansing this season.
And they played them 3 times, right?
And we have yet to play them this year. We're almost halfway through the season, and we have yet to play Lansing at all. So there's just a whole lot of quirks about it. I don't love it, but it seems like it was just kind of unavoidable, maybe depending on what space was available when you're making those schedules. It's like Lansing can't have a home game on this night because the baseball team's in town. So what does that do to all the other teams on the schedule because they've got to make sure Lansing is away?
Yeah.
So it's just hard. Like I said, I don't love it, but...
Well, the other part that's been weird about the schedule is when you look at the standings, you've got North Texas sitting on top, and they've only played 10 games, and Richmond just completed their 13th, is that right? Or was it their 12th?
That is correct. It's their 13th.
Yeah, so, I mean, you've got a 3-game difference. They've got 3 games in hand, and they're on top. That's they're having a good season. Let's put it that way. So looking a little bit more back on the game, on the gameplay itself, how did you think about the change that we had at top? Zide was not only not starting, but actually not on the team at all. And you saw Mari get his second start of the year. We all kind of know my view on Mari, but how did you think he played?
I think this was his best game of the season, even coming in as a sub, you know, including the games where he's come in as a sub. Had a really good header that went off the crossbar in the first half that would have, I mean, really exploded things had he been able to convert that. There were still a couple of times where he had the ball, and I wish he had been aggressive going at the goal instead of trying to kind of move side to side. He had one where he ended up drawing a foul, but I really would have loved to see him take off and try to challenge the keeper. But he was involved. He was a good target man. And so I was impressed with him. I really appreciated the work of Caporelli.
Yeah.
I think Stephen Beattie was not the best for him. You didn't really notice him much in the game.
No, I think Beattie comparatively didn't play his best game of the year. That's for sure. And I will give you that. I mean, I think Mare played very well compared to previous Mares. He definitely played very well. I don't know that he played any different than Yaya has. Like, I don't think that he separated himself out and said, hey, he really was the better starter. And I like the fact that Yaya does aggressively go after the goal. So
right.
I think if I'm still looking between those two, for whatever reason, say Zide's not playing in the next game, I would still like to see Yaya get the start. My question, though, even when I looked at the sheet, is I didn't know who would be your change of pace. And to see, as their announcer would have said, CT come off the bench, and really I felt he did exactly what you're talking about. He started being aggressive towards the goal. Now, it could have been that's Hankinson saying, hey, we don't need to go side to side. Take it right at him. You know, and even though, I don't know if he can be that change up, and we're going to look at Mari or Yaya being the starters as long as Zide is either not in the team or whatever's going on there. There's been no announcement as to why he wasn't included, why he wasn't even a sub. So I don't know if there's an injury or if it just could be, hey, he's getting the weekend off. Who knows?
I was very intrigued. There was a short bench last night. Jamie Dell apparently also was not listed on the team. I don't know if he traveled with them or not. Of course, there's the three defenders that are rehabbing that didn't make the trip. And I wonder if it was just they had a bus trip last weekend down to Statesboro, didn't get to play, had to then immediately ride home. And then they were going to have to turn around and make another quick bus trip to Richmond. And if they just said, you know what, it's middle of the season, probably a good chance for you to cycle out and get time off anyway. Why don't you just stay home instead of being cramped on this bus for 14 hours?
Yeah.
Both ways.
The other person,
uphill both ways.
The other person who wasn't on that team sheet as a sub was Colin Falvey.
He was there.
He was there, but he wasn't on there as a sub, which is another one of those I'm going, because I know you're allowed more than just three position player subs, so that was confusing as well.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I've heard with Colin was he was a bit of an Iron Man playing with the Charleston Battery. And so I think he's one that's just got a lot of miles on him, a lot of soccer miles from the times that he's played with USL. And that's why they made that call to try to get Daniel Navarro as a short-term loan, because Colin Falvey just, he needed more frequent rest in between. He wasn't going to be able to just continually start for a month.
Yeah.
And fill in ably for them till some of these guys get back.
So you referenced Navarro there. I mentioned earlier he had that one kind of first game jitters play. But other than that, how do you feel he stepped in there as central defender? I mean, that's a tough shoe to fill.
It is, with only, you know, a week and a half of practice with the team. So I was impressed. I thought he did well. That, you know, it wasn't particularly notable. I think, you know, just the fact that he was kind of inconspicuous showed that he kept everything under control. There weren't a ton, like I said, there weren't a ton of breakaway chances, bad giveaway passes.
Yeah.
You know, buckling under high pressure, they were able to play out of it. I have also, the last couple weekends, been very impressed with the play of Nicolas Amponsa. He looked a little shaky at the beginning of the year, I would say. And I wonder if it was just kind of a comfort of him coming, you know, first time playing with a team based in the United States, and if maybe he just needed a little more time to get himself settled. And now that he feels a little more settled and comfortable, he's really starting to show his potential that obviously Hankinson saw with him when he was coaching him in Jamaica.
Yeah, you know, not only did we see, you know, do we see the improvement happening there on the back line, but I feel like you see with Wolafe, he's coming up and he'd been, you know, the king of back passes, you said, for a couple times ago. He looked like he was willing to be more aggressive. I saw a few times where he was personally dribbling up and giving the overlap pass and continuing forward. So
yeah, he's been very defensive-minded. He had a shot in the first half that if it could have got some dip on it, that's another one that might have been a great goal in the first half that didn't come.
Yeah. There was a lot of those throughout. So I think it's safe to say we were all very pleased. Everyone I talked to about it felt like this was one of the best games, definitely the best game we've had on the road. Obviously, it's the first win. But not only that, but just overall, really from a team standpoint, without the crowd behind you at any point, they really showed. And there was 4,000 fans plus at that game. I think the final tally was like 4,300 people were there. So it was a good crowd on hand to watch the game, and they handled themselves really well. So overall, I think, safe to say, we were pretty happy with the way that went. All right, so next up, let's turn our attention towards the game coming up this weekend. We've got a game on Saturday with Greenville. It'll be our second time facing them at home. This will be the third and final match of the year, unless I'm mistaken. Do they have another away game in Greenville?
No, we're playing Greenville three times, so this is the end of the season with Greenville.
Yeah, so once again, we'll have another team we're done with before we play Lansing. Well done, USL, on your scheduling. We are sitting in fifth place, tied in points with Tucson, behind in goal differential, but we have a game in hand. So we're in a pretty good position. What are you looking at as the keys to this game?
I think it's going to be the same as the last couple games have been, with Greenville's another team that wants to kind of absorb pressure and try to counterattack. So it's going to be a bit of a cat and mouse, which one is going to try to extend themselves earliest and be the one to get broken.
So our last game versus Greenville, like I mentioned earlier, they pretty much dominated us and we walked away with a win. I personally think we're going to see them come out, try to be aggressor at the very beginning.
Right.
One of the stats that was repeated over and over and over and over again by the League One broadcast versus Richmond was, we haven't won a game where the other team has scored first yet, and we haven't lost a game where we've scored first yet. So I don't know how much I buy into that's just coincidence or if that really does affect the way our team plays, but I think there is something to the fact that we are both those defensive-minded, counterattack-style teams. That first goal is going to be important, and I think you could see Greenville come out a lot more aggressive because of that.
Yeah, and especially feeling like they let one get away in the last game they played with us. So I think that's a possibility. But I also, you've got another week here for Daniel Navarro to get settled. I don't know for sure, but there's a possibility that you may see Andrew Mullen or Leo Falla back from their injury. There's no guarantee of that. So, you know, there's going to be some more options hopefully with Zide and Jamie Dell in town that they can play. Maybe allow Caparelli to, you know, show his versatility in a different position on the field.
And how much do you think Caparelli coming out of the last game, is that they're just basically going to slowly bring him back, or do you think it was just a tactical move?
I think it was just a tactical move. He's one that they generally let play 75, 80 minutes. He doesn't get a lot of full 90s.
Okay. That's what I was saying to April last night. I was like, I wonder if that's just to keep, you know, a little bit more off the injury that he had and let it rehab back a little bit more, or if it was tactical. Because I really do like his versatility, and I could see him being... If Zide's back in the lineup, I could see him being that sub that comes off depending on what we're needing, which is a really valuable guy to have on your bench.
For sure.
So I could see him moving to the bench instead of getting the start in this upcoming game. I wouldn't be surprised to see Yaya get a start because he didn't play at all, and he's been taken out for Zide the last couple of home games. So I could see Yaya get the start with Zide coming off the bench again, and then that in that situation... You know, are you going to let Mare come in? Are you going to, because he played well in this last game? You know, so it gives Caparelli a chance to kind of float around. He can go anywhere from really anywhere on the field, which is really a great asset to have. At the same time, for a player, you know, they want to a point know what their role is.
Right.
And I think he's getting further and further along. He is playing more either left back or right wing.
Yeah,
it's like, could you be more opposite in where we're gonna put you? But So the other thing that's interesting about Greenville is they're another low-scoring team. We're one of the lower-scoring teams. They're one of the lower-scoring teams. So this is not – I don't expect another high-scoring affair.
I just looked at their last three matches. They have one goal in their 1-1 draw against Lansing Ignite this last Saturday.
Yeah, so that's not – we're not expecting a lot of fireworks in that game. I do think – I just feel really good about our team at home, and I really do feel that we're starting to become the team that people expected us to be when we started doing previews at the beginning of the season. Like, they're starting to really gel. You're starting to see them play off each other well. They know where each other are going to be, especially I'm seeing, like, and when I'm saying that, I'm talking about, like, UEFI. I never pronounce his name well.
You should work for Richmond.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's doing a very good job of not immediately going back anymore. He works right. very well with Zaguro. Zaguro loves to do the overlap, and please have him do that as often as possible because his left foot on a cross is a thing of beauty.
It is.
So
it's almost as beautiful as Charlie's brisket.
Never miss your opportunity ever to talk about Charlie's brisket. You would think they were a sponsor of Soccer Chat, but they're not. He's just a fan. So awesome. So going back to the Greenville game and what do we expect there? I am looking at us to be dominant. I expect a 2-0, a 3-1 type game because I feel like offensively we're getting better and our defense, even with the holes in it, has been very, very strong.
There is a lot to be said for the depth of this team in that they have had three of their defensive players go down, starting defensive players, yeah. And they've still managed to keep things generally, I mean, other than the catastrophe in Tucson we don't want to talk about.
That didn't happen. I don't know what you're
talking They do a very good job of keeping everything filled in, and I think that's really what you're going to see as this season goes on and little niggling injuries happen to other teams. What kind of depth do they have? What experience are they bringing off their bench to fill in for them? So, it just feels like getting this win on the road and being able to come home for three straight weeks against teams that are right near them, actually all three are below them in the standings now, says we have got a real opportunity and confidence that can kind of separate us from those guys and put us at another level as we go into the stretch of the season.
Yeah, and what was interesting, once again, during that broadcast, the guy doing the broadcast kept talking about people were expecting Richmond to start making a run soon. And I kept going, they've lost a lot straight. Like, it's not like they've lost one game or two games. They've lost four games straight. I don't know that anyone's really saying they're going to make a run. Typically, when a team's about to make a run, they're about to do exactly what you just outlined. They've been winning, and they are getting ready to face teams that are below them in the standings. That's usually when you're looking at a run. I looked at April, during halftime after, we stopped to get a drink, even though we could have fast-forwarded, we stopped, got ourselves a beverage. I looked at him, I was like, what's crazy is he keeps saying that. Like, that's typically the type of statement you hear from someone in like a baseball term where they're like, hey, they're playing well and they're getting ready to play the four worst teams in the National League, right? That's typically, and they're going to play what, a three-game series. They could go on a 10-2 run. You don't usually hear that in soccer, especially a 10-team league that's basically all except for two teams all stacked together.
Next week on the road at Tormenta, the week after that on the road here in Chattanooga, the week after that they're home against North Texas.
So that makes even less sense. I'd even look that up. So they're playing the top two teams and the most experienced team in the league. And they're about to make a run. Okay, sure. We'll go with that. like, that just doesn't make any sense, but all right. Yeah, and I will say, I definitely have to eat crow about my predictions at the beginning of the year because I expected all the two teams to be at the bottom, and instead they're not anywhere close to that. Now, Orlando CDB did just have a loss, but Toronto has looked a lot better than I expected them to, and North Texas, they would be making hay in championship, I think. Like, they're strong. I mean, heck, their players get called up to championship and have assists in the game in the Open Cup. So, I mean, they are a strong team, and I don't think you're going to see them coming back. That's one of those where, all right, you guys are making the playoffs. Let's hope we get a good game versus you guys if we have to play you in the 1-4. That's how I'm looking at them at this point.
Right.
So, all right, let's turn away from USL League One. We have some stuff we could talk about more on the international level. You want to touch on that?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to start out by saying, screw you, Canada. So you can find it on YouTube, I'm sure, if you have not heard all the Canadian commenters trashing the women's national team in their run over Thailand. Say what you will. Some folks, I understand the criticism against the celebrations.
I was on that boat, by the way.
That's fine. You're not Canadian, so I'm not saying screw you. I can understand some people having an issue with the way that they celebrated, even if you're okay with them not taking their foot off the gas because it's the top competition in world football for women. But all of those Canadian women on that broadcast just sounded sour grapes. I'm mad because we could never beat America. Blah, blah, blah.
So are you rooting for us to play Canada at this point?
I wouldn't be against it.
Yeah. I'm a little... I was on the last podcast. I talked about the fact that I had an issue with the celebration. And I still do. I still do think it's unnecessary to basically humiliate the other team with some of those group celebrations they're doing. I agree with some of the people that have said, hey, this may be their only chance to score in a World Cup. Let them celebrate. Correct. Let that individual celebrate.
Your name is Alex Morgan. That's not your only chance to score in a World Cup.
Right, but there was one girl who I think the 10th goal was her 10th goal of the game was like her first goal.
Sure.
I don't remember who it was. But let her celebrate. Of course she's going to celebrate. Anyone would, right?
Right.
My issue is you don't need to celebrate with the entire rest of the team. And so I get it to that point, but at the same time, I'm also a loser dude that's on a podcast out of Chattanooga. Like, me making those statements is very different than the national commentators for Canada doing that. There's a difference in quality there that you expect from the broadcast team. So yeah, I agree with you on that one. And not only the broadcast team, there was a few players that are former Canadian players doing the same thing on Twitter and Instagram and other places. All right, so let's turn to the actual play on the field. Today, both the U.S. Was back in action, and so was Thailand. And the games had a similar feel. So the U.S. handled them pretty well, right?
It was a little disappointing that, you know, they really seemed to have taken a step backwards, scoring 10 fewer goals than they did.
Yeah, the Chileans are on the same level, though, as Thailand, so that was really...
Actually, they are ranked lower than Thailand, so...
What?
That is a fact.
Because FIFA rankings are amazing. That's the only reason that works.
So, to be completely honest, yes, I watched the first half and was very impressed. They just, like I said previously, it's like watching them playing FIFA on easy.
Well, and it was like their bench from the Thailand game, by the way. Like, they switched, like, whole team out.
There were seven changes in the lineup. And, I mean, it's almost like what people talk about at least they used to. I don't know that Brazil is as strong, but a few years back, you know, you could have put a Brazilian B team in the World Cup and they probably would have made a quarterfinal. And I feel like this U.S. team probably is similar.
Yeah.
You take half of these women and make a second USA team, and it's easy that they're going to get out of group stage and maybe even win a round of 16 match.
Yeah, they are very, very good. And I think you're not going to see them really get challenged until they play in the quarterfinals, France. And once again, that, I think, pulls me back to the other game that was a 5-1 game that I've watched bits and pieces of. I didn't watch the full thing, but I turned on to watch. I watched about 10 minutes of a replay of it. And they were controlling Thailand just as much as the U.S. were. I think their coach is just a little smarter. And he went, we don't need to destroy them. We don't need to be ripped in the news media. We just need to get our second place and go and not have to play France in two games.
Sure. And I am interested to see what happens Tuesday. Tuesday is a wonderful day for American soccer. You've got the women playing at 2 o'clock. So if you're salary like Adam, you might be able to sneak away from your desk.
Sneak away? What are you talking about?
And watch that match. It's going to be an interesting one. It's the first one that's probably a real test that's gonna force these women to, you know, really focus in. I mean, you know, not to say that they were unfocused against Chile the way that they came off on the front foot that whole match. Then at 8 o'clock is Cloudy with a Chance of Handballs in the Adult Soccer League. And then at 10:30, the U.S. takes on Guyana, opening the Gold Cup.
Hold on, stop right there. I was like, what's happening at 8 o'clock? In my head, I'm like, what? I don't know the game at 8 o'clock. What am I missing?
The game of the century.
Oh, man. So your new name for your team, you're no longer just the Alphas. You guys are...
Cloudy with a Chance of Handballs.
Right. So part of me wants to make a joke here about the fact that we had that four handball game for the Red Bulls. Like, you're just trying to emulate the team that you're following?
I don't know. Shout out Brandon Edmondson for the name, which I thought was just incredibly clever.
Yeah, it's well done. It's one of those names you would expect to see, like, on a soccer fantasy team or something like that.
That's true.
But, yeah. And I hate to tell you this, they're not a fantasy team. All right, so other thing that's interesting when you're looking at this Women's World Cup is how, at least for me, how much you, when you watch the other games, when you're watching them, you are seeing a lot of strength coming from some of those other teams. Like, I'm starting to see, like, England looks good, France looks good. I'm starting to see other teams that I'm going, this is going to be an interesting, basically, I think the final eight's where it's going to get really interesting. When you get down to those quarterfinals, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And that, once again, goes to the quality that you're seeing across the board in women's soccer. What I do want to ask you about is, how much of this do you think is the improvement of women's international leagues, such as the women's FA that they have in England now? How much of this is the international players coming over to the U.S. and playing in the U.S. leagues, you know, or is this just a matter of the individual football federations are putting more of a focus on women's game?
I think there's a lot to be said for the strength of some of these European women's leagues, giving, you know, the U.S. leagues have done great things, but they also are roughly the size of USL League One. So there's not a ton of opportunities.
And they're spread out.
Massive. A lot of those opportunities are obviously going to American women playing primarily.
Yeah.
So I think the growth, and you even see some American women moving to Europe to play in those places as well. That's helping to grow those leagues. So I think that has done a lot to give some to give these women. And I think when you pair that with the focus that a lot of these federations are beginning to make in women's soccer, because they can't stand the fact that the United States is beating the crap out of them.
So that's where I was. That's why I brought that third option up. I think that's a bigger deal than people are making it. I think the U.S. men's team has been the joke, right?
Right.
And then the women's team shows up and says, you know what?
13-0.
Yeah. Well, maybe not that, but they show up in 1999, and basically that's what every game felt like.
Right.
Right? And I think those federations went, we got girls too, and you know what? We know this game better than the U.S. does. We can teach the next generation so that they can stop being dominant. And I think you're starting to get there. You're starting to see sprinkles of that putting more into it. Like, you're seeing, you know, once again, going with my Arsenal connection, Arsenal has gone to the point where the women's game used to be kind of that extra thing that they did on the side for almost like publicity, to where now it is on equal footing when it comes to the amount of support that they give it, when it comes in media and social media, mm-hmm. the way in which they refer to them. They don't treat it as a secondary program anymore. They treat it on the same footing. They talk about them as the Arsenal. They don't talk about them as the Arsenal women or the Arsenal ladies anymore. They put them on that same level. And they expect the same quality to be put into the training for them, the academy for them, and the people that they bring in from outside to be of that quality where they're considered on the level that they should be. Now, the argument could be made that maybe we don't want them on the same level as the men's team anymore, but let's not go
you
down that road.
You probably want to be just a tad above.
I mean, yeah, yeah. Let's,
losing in the European NIT isn't really where you want to finish.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. So let's not go down that road any further. But that's what I'm getting at. I think that you're seeing, in the combination of the federations on the individual countries, as well as those European leagues saying, we already know how to do this and we can do this better. And you're seeing certain clubs, such as Arsenal's done it, Chelsea's done it, and even some of the league...
Juventus in Italy, I think, is one.
Yeah, well, I'm talking more... This is my English bias because I do watch English soccer a lot. But even then, like, one of the things that's interesting in the women's game is you're seeing some of the championship and League One teams put a lot into their women's team, which is creating where their women's team are becoming actually better when it comes to, like, their competition level than the men's team, which is really interesting to see as well. So I think the combination of those two things is what really is driving this. And if the women's game doesn't really get it together in the U.S., we have a chance of going down that slippery slope of not competing 20 years from now on the same level and being back where our men's team is. One of the big problems we have is our women's professional league, like you mentioned, it's like a 10-team league that goes all the way from Portland to North Carolina. And a league that small that doesn't have a ton of money in it, there's not a huge TV package for it, that's hard to keep going and pay at a rate when you're competing against leagues in France and Spain and England where their travel costs are lower.
Right.
And as their base of players gets stronger, they don't have the need for the U.S. player as much. So we're at almost a point where we really, as a country, as a federation, need to decide, are we going to continue to make this a focus? And if so, they need to figure out a way to help that women's professional league truly get off the ground to a point where it can compete continually with the European leagues. And that's something to keep your eye on the next 4, 8, 12 years. Where are we at 3 World Cups from now? Are we at that same level?
I think to bring it back close to home, that's an exciting thing about the Red Wolves Academy and its focus of every age group has got equal number of boys and girls teams, has got Lady Red Wolves as well as regular Red Wolves helping with the coaching and working with the kids. Lots of very smart men and women coaching both boys and girls. And so that is going to maybe help put Chattanooga on the map in helping to continue to feed that pipeline of American soccer talent.
Yeah, and if you get a chance now, granted, at this point the regular season open week is over. We are in first place. We can always hope for a home game for the Lady Red Wolves to get a chance to go watch them. But they're fun to watch. Like there's definitely a lot of skill there. A number of times I saw Carly Banks, you know, really like a ball that's kicked a little bit behind her, making the right move to adjust to it. I saw Summer, one of the other players there, her speed and her ability with the ball at her feet. Mari should go take some lessons because she's impressive with the ball at her feet.
Right.
Like, honestly, there's a lot of skill there with the women's team as well. So I would 100% endorse the idea of, hey, go out and watch these women. See what we have just in our own backyard. But also, talking about the academy, when my son was doing the under-8 academy, which is free if you make it in there, they were expecting an equal number of girls and boys. And when the selection process, you had both men and women coaches that were looking at both genders to say, who's ready? Who's there? And they were both going in. I watched one give instruction to another boy that was playing right alongside my son. She stopped and said, hey, do this. And it was incredibly detailed and well explained to a 6 or 7 year old. Like, mm-hmm. The skill set is there.
Right.
And so to see that is exciting. And I think you're right. I think that's the way that we get our focus back. Is it focusing on the top or do they go the different route? Do they focus bottom up, which is something the men's team has seemed to fail. We only have MLS as our main focus. That's one of what, you know, go to soccer Twitter. That's all they argue about, right?
Well, and we spend all of our time growing the top instead of investing in roots.
Right. Which is the exact opposite of what they were doing in England. Like that
right.
Where you see these teams and these organizations putting the money, and it is expensive to put true academy programs in that will reach out to more than just the cream of the crop, that reaches out to those players that may come from underprivileged families, that may come from areas where the idea of even getting cleats is a hard thing. Right. We've got to, as a country, both on the men's side and the women's side, figure out how do we get young people that don't have the funds involved in soccer, which is not a cheap sport. Now, futsal, playing on the street, those things, yes, you can do that. All you need is a ball, right? But organized soccer is not cheap. Travel is not cheap. Those things are not cheap. So how do we do that? And I think the Red Wolves have shown, under-8, it's completely free. We're going to get them loving the game. And then from there, if there is financial need, they have availability of scholarships. Those are the type of things that you have to do. And so to see them doing that on both the boys and the girls' side is exciting. We just need to see that in more areas and more often.
One of the other things that I would throw out there, and it's a thing that I've been impressed with the Red Wolves Academy, talking about helping with coaching education. So Bob Martino is investing in the absolutely ridiculous costs that are involved in trying to help someone become certified to coach soccer at a high level. I don't understand why Nike, Adidas, U.S. Soccer, all of these people that spend all of this money are not in making those kind of investments that it's, instead of being thousands of dollars, it's maybe hundreds to train some of these people so that when they're out there working with youth, even if it's not a kid who is on the fast track to the U.S. national team, he's getting good coaching, and who knows, if he's 14, he starts to blossom because he got that good coaching instead of it was just the dad that had the best work schedule and could show up and volunteer his time.
Well, and how many examples in other U.S. sports do we have of that kid who never played football until he was a senior in high school, or or never played basketball until he had that 5 or 6 inch growth and went from being 6'4 to 6'9, and then someone said, "Hey, let me teach you some stuff," right? There's all kinds of stories about that. We don't have really those stories in soccer. Now, part of that is soccer takes a long time to learn, and it is a very technical sport. Mm-hmm. But the other part of that is the coaches don't exist. And the ones that are the best, they get found quickly, right? And they get plucked, and they get pulled out of that system, so they don't get the effect. So we get our Pulisic that gets pulled over overseas when he's 14 years old. But we miss out on the kid that could have been something when he was 19, be that, okay, he's still rough around the edges, but man, he's got a really good left foot, and he was a right-footed natural, right? But he doesn't yet know how to do X, Y, and Z. Let's teach him X, Y, and Z. We can't teach him the intangible that he just has.
Right.
Right? We don't have that because there's no one to teach it. And so you're 100% right. That's another place we need to focus. All right. So you got anything else for us, Alex?
U.S. Open Cup date.
You can patent that, but no one else wants it.
It's a dad joke for Father's Day. Brian Fernandez is a golden god. Scored 2 goals against the Seattle Sounders in the Tacoma Rainiers Baseball Stadium in their Open Cup match. So the Timbers move on. We'll be taking on LA Galaxy on Wednesday. And congratulations to Atlanta United, who gave up an early goal to Charleston Battery, managed to tie the game late, and then score a couple in stoppage time for a – or not stoppage, I'm sorry, in extra time. Scored 2 goals in extra time and came away with a 3-1 win and are moving on to the next round to play somebody. I don't know who. Anyway, Brian Fernandez is a man like you and me. He puts his pants on one leg at a time. It's just that once his pants are on, he scores goals.
All right, so you brought the Open Cup. I'm going to ignore Brian Fernandez because you have an you have an odd obsession with him. No. So I'm going to bring this up because you brought up Open Cup. I really, really dislike the fact that these Open Cup games are played in fake MLS homestands. Like, if you're not going to play in your regular MLS stadium and you're going to play at some minor league baseball park, or you're going to play your Atlanta 2 team stadium, which that's a different situation because they're supposed to play in Charleston, but and no one's coming to them. Nobody cares about these games. None of their fans really care about a game versus a USL team. But if you flip that and you played those games in the cities they're supposed to be played in. Now, granted, the MLS for MLS game's different, right?
There was a very good crowd. Of course, it does help. Tacoma is kind of like if we were going to be playing Nashville and Murfreesboro. Yeah. So it's that same kind of drive. There was a good crowd that I'm sure drove up from Portland. And getting to Tacoma from Seattle is like an extra 30 minutes. So there was a pretty decent crowd. And it was, as you said, an MLS versus MLS. If one of them were playing Colorado Switchbacks or something like that, it would definitely probably have been different.
And it helps that it's Portland versus Seattle, right? Like, that's a big rivalry.
That's very true.
So that helps as well. But yeah.
Eat it, Seattle.
Yeah. I just feel like the Open Cup needs to realize the way to grow the game, right? Use the Open Cup to grow the game is... Have the lower seed team through whatever. I would even go as far as saying through the semifinals. They host the game. So if the Charleston Battery had won their game. Now, granted, They didn't get to play in Charleston. My understanding is that was a fluke, that field, if it had just dried up, like if they had played that game in Charleston when they played the game in Atlanta, it would have been fine. It had just been torrential raining for so long that it couldn't take any more water and just needed to soak up. But play those games in Charleston. Play, you know, St. Louis should have gotten to host the game. Indy should have been hosting the game. Those are the type of things that I'm just like, you're missing your opportunity, right? I mean, imagine the crowd that you would have here in Chattanooga if you're hosting Nashville next year when Nashville's an MLS team.
Right.
Or you're hosting Atlanta's actual Atlanta One team, right? We've already seen what that looks like. Because, you know, a normal game for CFC is 3,000 to 4,000 fans and 12,000 people were there. So we know what that looks like. So that should be an eye-opener to the Federation to say, okay, the lower division teams care about this. The MLS teams don't. Why are we giving them the game and not even generating the revenue we could generate?
Right. So I think it'll help now that they've got a TV deal in place. They're going to want to have cameras on full stadiums here again to help grow the cup, grow the game. So I think that maybe is something that they'll look at. I agree with you. I think it would be a fantastic thing in this round, especially as the teams from that lower, from these lower groups have winnowed themselves down. You look at like Sacramento Republic having to go to play the San Jose Earthquakes. There are plenty of loyal San Jose fans that'll take a night and drive to Sacramento, and Sacramento will pack out their stadium with folks that are excited that San Jose's coming, not just for a friendly, but to play a game that matters.
Yeah.
Even if it is mostly backups, bench guys. Yeah. You know, Portland was, well, I have my own issues with Portland in that game, but they played their full team because they're on such a long break. They played a very not as good Seattle team because they had so many that were away on international duty. Portland got an early lead and then just decided to try to sit on it, and that's my own issue. But it's still, you know, when you've got something like Sacramento or New Mexico United excited to have one of these MLS teams come to their stadium.
Yeah.
It's going to be the better atmosphere.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, I doubt that anyone from USSF is listening to us, but we're not the only ones making that argument. The other argument people are talking about is having MLS come in around earlier,
right?
Which also makes sense. If MLS is having to play themselves already, why are they not in around earlier? Like, why are you bringing them in to have to play themselves? That doesn't make sense. So bring them in around earlier. You get that more likelihood of an upset when there's more of them playing other USL Championship, NPSL, and League One teams, right?
No, I think you generally what you see with a lot of these teams is unless they if they luck themselves into a semifinal, then they take it serious.
Well, and honestly, that's how the FA Cup is.
Right.
That's how in England. That's 100% how whatever they want to call the English League Cup, whatever sponsor it has this year. I think it is going to be Carabao again, but
hey, Charlie's, if you're interested,
yeah,
the Charlie's Brisket League Cup.
Yeah, that's the same thing that they do there. That's hilarious.
Well, it's brisket, mate.
Oh, well done. Yeah, but it's the same thing. It's that they don't take it seriously until their scrubs get them there, and then the scrubs get to sit on the bench. But it does matter if it gets to that point. The fact is, it gets you into the Champions League for on this side of the pond, right? I went pond. See, you catch that? Because I apparently couldn't remember the word Atlantic.
So global.
It's an ocean. But no, I mean, it gets you into Champions League. So it's the actually probably the easiest route into it. Not that MLS teams seem to care about that either. I don't get MLS at all sometimes. But anyways, I digress.
That's all I had.
You know, honestly, this was a good weekend. We don't need to sully it up with any more of our stupid talk. So thank you guys so much for listening to us. We want to once again thank our sponsors. Golden Goal Press, the best choice for you to get your custom shirts, hats, mugs, and other items for just yourself or your organization. Check out their amazing products at a fraction of the price of other places at goldengoalpress.com. And also Roughneck Scars, official scarf supplier to MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. All right, guys. Once again, thanks so much, and we'll catch you on the other side.
Bye. It's Father's Day, so I need to throw in some dad jokes, obviously. So two peanuts were walking down the street. One was assaulted. I used to have a job at the calendar factory, but I got fired because I took a couple days off. Two guys walk into a bar. What does the third one do?
Duck.